The following podcast contains adult subject matter. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everybody, welcome to this special interview episode of Thinking Outside the Long Box. And of course, we love to get into contact with people that participated or acted in some of our pop culture classics. And today I'm really excited to have Jack Noseworthy on. He played Justin in Event Horizon. You may remember him as a guy that goes in an airlock and explodes. So, Jack, how are you today, man?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I am doing quite well. I guess my first question is, like, how did you get involved in being in Event Horizon?
I had done a couple of movies for Paramount. I was in the Brady Bunch movie, and I was in a movie called Breakdown with Jonathan Mostow, with Kurt Russell, directed by Jonathan Mostow. And they were making this, Paramount was making this movie called Event Horizon. I met the director on the project, and I was hired to play Justin. So I sort of back-to-back did three movies at Paramount.
Oh, that's cool. So when you were getting involved in like Event Horizon, like, did you kind of know what you were getting into? Like that it was going to be this crazy, like, science fiction horror film with like intense special effects, or was it just kind of like a, here is a new thing for you?
When I first read the script, it read to me, on the page. No, I didn't quite know what it was going to be. When I first read the script, it really read to me almost like a Rosemary's Baby type of script, because it was this thing then that dark inside, what we keep talking about in the movie, was almost this imaginary fear that off the page, I didn't quite have the visual experience to imagine what that was going to be in Paul Anderson's hands. So it read to me like a psychological thriller, which I still think it plays as. However, there's obviously some great visuals in the movie. So it was definitely unknown to me that it would become this. It's a really scary movie.
Right. You know, coming into the film, like, there's a lot of like practical special effects and like big sets, and I've heard that the suits were incredibly heavy, and that in between takes some of the actors would have to hang from special made hooks for them. Can you talk to me a little bit about that?
Who told you that?
The internet.
Well, that's almost true. Yes, the suits are very heavy. If I can remember correctly, they were, I believe that they weighed about 85 pounds each. So what we would do is in between takes, they built these like, you know how at the gym, there's those, there's an apparatus where you can put your forearms on it and you can do lift your legs and do abs.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So basically we had that with a, with like a little seat on it so we could sit and get up on that. So it took the weight of the suit and we could sort of rest in between takes, because it was pretty arduous.
Right. It sounds like it was almost like painful at times to like walk around in the suit, like just because it was weighing you down so much and you're obviously not in real zero gravity.
Well, I'll be honest with you. I was making a big, huge movie for Paramount Pictures with Lawrence Fishburne and Sam Neill. And so any amount of, you know, pain that you could imagine was swept away working on this huge picture. We shot at Pinewood in London on the James Bond set, the 007 set, or the soundstage, excuse me. And all of the sets were practical. They were huge. They were humongous sets. And so when you walked on set, it was really dramatic and really exciting. And I had never been to London. So I was there for 6 months. And it was a pretty exciting time to be part of this movie that had this production design that was just – it was literally and figuratively out of this world.
That's cool. You were working, obviously, with Sam Neill, who's like this big name. He's been in Jurassic Park and all these other giant movies. And then Lawrence Fishburne, obviously, you know, a huge name at the time because of The Matrix. Like, kind of how were those interactions? Like, were they good to work with? Like, were you just overwhelmed, excited? I know that if I were, you know, going into a movie like that, I would just be too excited to actually probably have conversations with them.
No, I wasn't that way at all. You know, I was certainly excited, but not in the I'm not unable to speak or breathe. It was excited. I was excited in that I was able to work with great actors who I had a lot of respect for, who, you know, were open and generous and serious people who were serious about their craft and were welcoming as a fellow actor. So it wasn't like that. I mean, you know, I'm trained at, I'm very well trained at what I do. I was working with other actors who were trained at what they do. And when you scrape away all the sort of idealistic business of it all and you get right down to it, we were on set working on a movie. That's cool. As simple as that. Yeah.
Oh, it's because you're a professional and I'm not.
It was also my second movie with Kathleen Quinlan. Kathleen was in Breakdown as well. So Kathleen and I had already done a movie together. If you haven't seen Breakdown, you should see that movie. It's one of the best movies ever. It's such a great movie. It's with Kurt Russell. We kidnap J.T. Walsh and we kidnap his wife, and Kurt is on the search to find out what happened to his wife. And it's a pretty spectacular movie.
I have seen that movie. Yeah, it's really good. What movie you're talking about. I do love that movie.
Yeah. But Kathleen and I had worked together, so there was a comfort level. Certainly, we were both coming into this big movie in London for 6 months and having worked with another actor on the set. So
obviously, the movie is just completely, like, it's graphic and it's scary and it's like a completely unsettling movie. Did the director, like, did Paul Anderson, like, try to, you know, up that tension on set, where, like, there are things that you guys were experiencing that made it so that you had that sensibility of as you were filming the movie?
I think that the scene where I kind of have a convulsions on this table, you know, where I wake up a little bit and I think Kathleen is with me and I'm sort of convulsing on a table. At one point, they were, I believe they were trying to figure out how they would do that and if they were going to rig the table to shake. And I was like, no, guys, I'll just do it. So I was just sort of making my body shake like that. And so it created this odd energy around every, because people thought, is he okay? Is something wrong with him? And so that, like, things like that would happen. Something would happen naturally where an oddity or an actor would bring something to the table that wasn't expected. And so you could feel the focus start to come around that, so that it would generate the right energy that would be picked up by the camera. So I know. And then in the scene where I spontaneously combust, which I'm sure you'll get to at some point, one thing I didn't realize is that makeup took about 8 hours. It took about 8 hours to get it on and 2 hours to get it off. So it was quite a long process. So I got to know the makeup artists really, really well, because I would come in at about 2 o'clock in the morning and I would lay down in the makeup chair and I basically would sleep while they laid these very thin latex pieces of makeup on my face and painted. They're phenomenal artists. There were these like tubes, very thin tubes that went through and under my face and underneath the latex, so that when those moments came, they would fill those tubes up with blood and you'd see them sort of like explode on my face. It took a very, very long time. The process to do that was something that Paul really loved. Like more blood. He just kept saying, I want more blood, more blood.
That's awesome.
And he got it. So.
So because there's so much, you know, atmosphere to the movie and it builds that, like, unsettling. And then there's the moments where really intense, like, gore happens. You know, the way films are made, there's probably moments where those two things are disconnected, like the being atmospherically creeped out versus, like, you know, your gore, you know, prosthetics, or like Sam Neill with the jacked up face. Like, how do you balance those two things on set? Or do you, like, kind of work through parts of it, you know, at the same time? Or do you have to kind of shift back and forth with your attitude?
So, really, all you can do is play the scene and be in the moment and play the scene. And you can't atmosphere is created by the filmmakers. You just have to be truthful to the character and connect with whatever, if it's a real person or if it's not a person, if it's something that you are creating within yourself. Like playing mood and atmosphere, that's out of our hands. So you really just, that comes in with the music and the lighting and everything else that's uncontrolled, that's not within our control. You really just have to play the scene and be as honest and truthful as possible. And all that other stuff that you're referring to is actually put on by the filmmaker in sound or post or Foley or whatever it is that they're doing. You're not really, you don't shift what you're doing to play, you know, internalized fear or externalized fear. You just play the scene.
That's cool. I like asking questions like that because I think most people don't know those things. Like they don't know exactly what goes into the artistry of acting versus the artistry of, like you said, like Foley or like sound design and those sorts of things. Like that's really cool to me that it's more about you being true to the character in your acting. Like that's neat.
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty fascinating. I'm sure that if you look at behind the scenes for things, if you watch a scene before they put the music in and then when they put the music in, you can often see how that changes the tone of the scene. Or if they put a different type of music in, you see, wow, that exact same scene is now a completely different scene because they've decided to use up-tempo music instead of a ballad. You know, it changes everything. And that's out of our control.
That's really interesting. Like it leans so much credence to like your craft because you have to just be that person like in that moment, which I mean, for me would be a really difficult thing to do because I'm kind of only ever me, you know? so there's a lot of talk on like the internet and special features and stuff about a lot of lost footage for this film. And so it sounds like there's quite a bit of like intense like violence and gore. And originally when they took it to the MPAA, it got an NC-17 rating. Did you realize like as you were making the film, like how intense the creation was going to be in the long run?
No, I know that a lot of that has to do. I have a vague memory of that now. Not so much that there's lost footage, but that it did maybe get an NC-17. I think you're right, although I wouldn't. Put too much credence into my memory. However, we were a lot of those body casts and that you see, you know, we're floating in water. When things are happening to people, we did all kinds of full body casts, which also took hours, like that prosthetic makeup and then full body makeup where they created different versions of us to use throughout the set. That was all pretty intense. So, you know, we didn't know what they were going to do with those things. So then that again was the director working specifically with the special effects team and filming a lot of that material. It's like in Sam's dreams, right? Or my dream where things are happening. So I would imagine there could potentially be some footage that they didn't use. However, you know, I'd like to see it.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's a DVD release of it that has footage that they had found and then also like storyboards integrated that they know were filmed, but like the actual film is lost now. It's actually a really interesting story about all of that. So what I would love to know, like, I remember my initial reaction to this movie. I saw it probably when I was like, I want to say like 16 or 17 years old. So I was pretty young. And like, just, you know, those scenes where like the hell scenes where they pull up like the footage on the monitors and, you know, people are throwing up their intestines and getting crucified, like with barbed wire and all that crazy stuff that happens.
Like, yeah.
Blew my mind and terrified the crap out of me as a kid. Like it was one of those like brain worms that just like never went away. What was your initial reaction to seeing like the finished film?
I think when I first saw it, I remember going to the premiere and I brought my niece and my nephew to the premiere and they were quite young. So I remember watching it and being suddenly really aware that this movie is a lot scarier visually than I had expected. And so I was conscious of the fact that I had two younger people with me. They were even, they, I think they were in their early teens. And so I'm just flashing back to that feeling of sitting in the theater and watching the movie. So being super conscious of these two young people. And then also you're watching your performance, which of course I'd seen some of it because I'd done ADR, and just feeling like, wow, this movie's it really, it's interesting. It's creative. It's visual. I can remember thinking Paul had something really special that I'm not sure I was quite aware of when we were actually filming, and took it to a level that was unexpected for me.
That's cool. Like,
again, you have to remember those scenes that you're talking about. You know, I wasn't there for those. I didn't film those scenes. I wasn't part of those scenes. Right. So I'm seeing a lot of stuff that I didn't get to see when I shot the movie because, you know, I'm not in every scene.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I figured. Like, there's so much of that movie that you wouldn't have had to have been a part of. And then you get to see it and you're like, wow, that I assume there were moments where you're like, that's terrifying or that's gross. Like,
or it takes you by surprise. The scenes with Sam's, you know, wife and, you know, just watching your fellow actors having in scenes that you never saw shot and thinking, wow, you know, these guys are just super talented. How honored you are to have worked with them.
Wow, that's really cool. It sounds like it was a really awesome experience for you. So before the call, we were talking a little bit about what you are about to embark on. And I would love for you to talk about that because this sounds like the kind of work that there needs to be more of getting done in our world right now. Tell me what you're about to get started doing.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking me. I've been an actor for 33 years, and I vacillate back and forth between doing film, television, and theater. I've done a number of Broadway shows, and throughout my career, I've been associated with an organization called Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, which is a health organization that grants money in all 50 states to people that are either living with or fighting HIV and AIDS, as well as women's health issues such as breast cancer and cervical cancer and anything else that could sort of get in the way of people living a healthy lifestyle. It's associated with the Actors Fund, and they give about $12 to $13 million away. So basically, if you're an actor or, you know, actor adjacent, and you can't pay your rent or you can't pay for your medical bills or you can't pay for your prescriptions, you can go to Broadway Cares, the Actors Fund, and they will pay it for you. For example, if there's a woman who has cancer and she has two children, we don't want you to be homeless. We will pay your rent. We will help you get through that rough period. With no questions, you don't have to pay that back. So I've taken on a formal job with this organization, and I actually start tomorrow working with their what's called their Angel Circle, which is their sustainability initiative, helping people continue with their planned giving. So, for example, if someone wanted to choose to make a monthly donation, I would help facilitate that. And I have a small portfolio of about 300 people where I help continue the planned giving for this organization so that it can sustain all of the great work it's doing. It's quite a noble organization, and I'm really looking forward to working for them in more of a formal position and allow myself to continue to work as an actor and use my platform as an actor to continue to up the profile of this terrific organization that I've been proud to work with for the past 30 years.
That's awesome. It sounds so fulfilling, and like, it's great that you're in movies and Broadway and television and stuff, but that is the kind of work that I love to hear people utilizing, like, you know, their fame or their, like, you know, prowess as a human being to do. Like, that is really cool, man. I applaud you for that. And thank you so much for doing good work in the world. There needs to be more people doing that stuff.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I mean, I really think that, you know, I'm a working actor. You know, I'm a journeyman, and at all different levels of my profession, I think there's a lot of people that are giving back, and so I'm proud to be able to take my little monicum of success and help do some good with it. And especially now I'm a dad. So being a dad and having a child really does change everything. So it's just terribly altruistic, but I'm hoping to make the world a better place.
That's okay. I think all of us on this show, no matter how big of assholes we are also doing the same thing. So, well, Jack, thank you so much for being on our show. Is there a website that people could go to learn more about Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS?
Yes. Yeah, there is actually. You can go to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, and that's at Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS, and that's an organization. You can go right to their website, and please, if anybody is out there listening and would like to make a donation, just push donate, and we'll be happy to help you out.
That is awesome. Well, Jack, thank you again so much for your time. Thank you for being in one of my favorite science fiction horror films of all time. And yeah, keep up the good work, man. You're doing great stuff.
Thanks, brother. I really appreciate it. It's nice talking to you guys.
Oh man, what an awesome interview that was with Jack. It's really cool to hear about like the craft of acting and kind of the difference between what a film is like when it's done versus what the film was like when you were in it. Like it's good stuff, man, and he's doing some good work out there. So please go to Broadway Cares Equity Fights AIDS. I assume either .org or .com. Probably should have looked that up before I said it out loud, but check that out. It's a way for people that are in the acting profession that we love so much, that we participate in so much, to help people that need help with medicine. Hopefully this is picking up Doyle cutting the waffle. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed this interview episode. We'll see you guys soon. Bye.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast. Join us on Facebook and Twitter to get behind-the-scenes information for exclusive content and to be notified when new episodes are available. The thoughts and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual and do not necessarily represent or reflect those of the Thinking Outside the Long Walks podcast, Barron Space Productions, its partners, or affiliates. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is made available by its creators, Juan, John, and Gabe. The podcast is edited and produced by Juan, and Albie is the co-executive producer. The Thinking Outside the Long Box podcast is a Barron Space production.